With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for fool. We've surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right here.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school.
Why should the children gotta have trouble? Trouble.
Good evening. This is Ed Morrow. Trouble. You got trouble in River City. Are the words spoken in the most popular musical comedy currently on the Broadway stage? Words spoken in an effort to convey, in theatrical terms, the nostalgia felt by most Americans for the 19th century. More important, for the 19th century values. The concern felt by parents 50 years ago for the way their sons and daughters spent their leisure time was a concern destined to echo in the ears of the 20th century.
If your hands aren't busy and you aren't working, it's so easy to get into mischief and think of things to do that you shouldn't do.
Too much leisure time, a person can get idle and just sort of let himself go, get lazy.
Americans living in 1958 face an era in which all of the problems of the good life, including the uses of leisure time, can be, indeed must be, assessed as one of the most important parts of the hidden revolution. In the next 30 minutes, we intend to explore the possibilities inherent in a situation where most men and women may find themselves working in what our fathers would have thought a paradise, a time, a place where an individual works a 20-hour week.
From Lexington, Kentucky, from Wilhelmina, Oregon, from Tonawanda, New York, the letters came pouring in. Letters of thanks to Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company for sponsoring the Hidden Revolution. Thus far, listeners have asked for more than 15,000 copies of Nationwide's free program discussion guide. Naturally, we appreciate the interest and thoughtfulness of listeners in writing to us, and we're pleased to provide these free booklets as another Nationwide service. But more important, the letters we've received from listeners are an indication that people want to face up to the problems that affect their lives. They're eager and willing to investigate, discuss, and express themselves on basic issues that affect our democratic way of life. Questions ranging from automation and its effect on jobs, to education, the nature of freedom, and the quest for peace. For these are important problems facing our society today, largely as a result of our rapid scientific and technological progress. Once the problems are made clear, ideas for their solution are not far behind. We hope these programs help contribute to better understanding of our changing world. Nationwide Insurance believes that, as a modern business, it has a responsibility to help people find solutions to problems that affect both personal security and our way of life. That's why we sponsor this series, The Hidden Revolution. It's also the reason why Nationwide has established a participation program in which policyholders meet with management to discuss ways in which their companies can better serve their needs. For in a democratic society, both individuals and the institutions that serve them must work together toward the common goal of building a better, more secure way of life. Later, we'll tell you more about how Nationwide is helping nearly 3 million policyholders toward greater personal security.
These are the sounds of leisure. A bowling alley, a symphony orchestra, a high school football game. To most Americans, leisure is a sometime thing, an oasis at the end of a journey through the desert of anywhere from 40 to 60 hours work per week. But to the American of the future, leisure will be the way in which he spends a high proportion of his active life. For automation has made it possible to maintain and increase our national productivity with an effort only a fraction as intense as that to which we have heretofore devoted the national energies. In Torrance, California, the Longren Aircraft Corporation instituted 12 months ago a program designed to meet the American future in terms of our rapid transition to a leisure-acclimated society. The Longren firm's president, Hamden Wentworth, pointed his company down the road to the 20-hour week when he authorized a three-day weekend for the firm's personnel every month. Plant personnel were obliged to put in an extra 8-hour day to earn the long weekend. Nevertheless, the Lundgren experiment is the first which we can point to as illustrative of the trend to concentrated leisure. It is, in a sense, a laboratory experiment in the American future. We felt the long weekend to be so important a development along the road to a leisure-oriented society that it deserved a concentrated study. How did Lundgren's employees react to a three-day weekend every month? Surprising as it may seem, the verdict was not unanimously favorable.
Well, that long weekend was for the birds, as far as I'm concerned. That extra day, you know how wives are. She planned something for me. I either had to take her shopping, or I had to change the wallpaper, or I had to move the furniture, or I had to plant some new shrubbery. Always something to do. It was a terrible thing, just a terrible thing. Too long. A man shouldn't have all that time with his family. He gets tired of them. Three-day weekends, they were just too much. I'll tell you, by the time Monday night come, I was just dying to get back to work.
This is an aircraft worker's wife.
No, I don't like the long weekend. I have so much work to do around the house. When my husband is around, he just gets in my way.
Some people felt the plan was a success. Here is Ernie Roach, Lundgren's production manager, a man close to the company's project.
I'm the one that originated the idea and, with the help of Mrs. Wentworth, sold the idea to top management. I got to thinking this could be used each week. I personally need to relax once in a while, get out in the country, away from people, noise. This gives me a chance to thoroughly relax. The world today is a fast place to live in. They say a vacation amounts to a change. This is definitely a change than your normal time off. I and the wife bought a camping trailer. We've used it almost every weekend, going to different parks, different lakes, and just thoroughly getting away from things and enjoying it.
Lundgren's plant superintendent looked at it somewhat differently.
Here at Plant 2, where we ship the final articles, and the impact is quite different. We are affected. We've had a problem with some of the personnel in regards to showing up on the job. Because of this long weekend, we had quite an absentee problem. The people are more or less treated as a holiday. You actually don't get the production out either.
We asked several of the Lundgren employees to tell us the uses to which they put their long weekend. Listen to an 18-year-old assembly line riveter.
Well, I get up in the morning, about sometimes 9, sometimes 12, and take a shower. That time it's noon by the time I get up, so I have lunch. Maybe go outside and work around the yard, water the grass, something like that, or work in the car. That's about all. Sometimes I just don't do nothing. I just stay inside the house and they watch TV all day.
The use to which leisure is put is a matter of controversy. The ways in which men choose to spend their leisure time are as varied as the quality of their minds. Here is a man to whom the long weekend is an adventure in creativity. Listen to Dan Lester.
Here's the thing. As a hobby, I make small child's furniture. You go down and you look at furniture in a furniture store, and it's all about the same line. But with me, I like to create something a little different, a different idea. In other words, I use my own ideas to create these small pieces of furniture and like that. Where here it's all done by prints. I mean, you got everything to go by. With there, if I want to make a change, well, that's it, I make it. You feel like you've accomplished something. Where in your own hobby shop, well, you're seeing your ideas come to life.
Unfortunately, the long weekend instituted in a small aircraft plant in California is not long for this world. Here is President Hamden Wentworth with his explanation.
We had a vote taken last month, and it was voted out. I just don't think the people were quite used to this new cycle of life that this established. The only reason where you run into difficulties on an advanced move like this is there's always a minority that just can't fit into this new approach to working. Usually this is a small percentage of your plant, but unless you have 98% or 90% acceptance for this type of thing, it's pretty tough to have it really sink in.
If the long weekend, as conceived by a progressive aircraft plants administration, is still too advanced for those offered its benefits, how far must we be from an intelligent use of what may eventually be the 20-hour week? Listen to a group of Lundgren personnel as they discuss the outlook for the future.
I have tried staying at home, and I'm much happier working, and I think I'm much healthier. The humdrum of staying at home all of the time, why, It gets monotonous after you get the house cleaned up. You don't know what to do with yourself.
I believe myself that our system of education needs to be changed on account of automation coming up this way. There's always going to have to be people who run the machines, and as machines progress and getting more complicated and difficult to understand, the people are going to have to progress right along with them to understand them.
If your hands aren't busy and you aren't working, it's so easy to get into mischief and think of things to do that you shouldn't do. And I think everyone should keep busy. I mean, irregardless of what it is. You can see examples around of the mischief that some of them get into just being off 3 days.
Many of those we talked with in Torrance felt that increased leisure could not be effectively used without more and better education. Some indeed felt that leisure itself is of doubtful value.
Too much leisure time, a person can get idle and just sort of let himself go, get lazy. And with idle time, again, you revert back to laziness. Unless you have something to occupy your mind all the time and keep busy. If they're planning a 20-hour work week, why, somebody's going to have to think of something to keep people occupied the other 5 days.
For an age that has seen an explosion in the rate of population increase and industrial growth, has also seen a revolutionary change in the technological means for supplying socio-economic demands. We live in the age of automation, an age in which the machine has been so developed as to take the place of its master in many areas of industrial and agricultural growth. For some, automation does not necessarily mean extra time. Here is an engineer.
I have been reading items about the 20-hour work week and the likes like that, but, I mean, I'm just thinking about how nice it would be. I'm supposed to be on a 40-hour work week now, but, I mean, I think I've been expending about 60 hours a week, so you talk about in the past it was 60 hours, well, I'm still working 60 hours.
18 months ago, we spoke to Walter Ruther, executive vice president of the AFL-CIO and president of the United Auto Workers. He told us then, in an interview for See It Now, that automation held the key to the American future.
I think we need to understand that automation really is just in its infancy, that we've just begun this whole mechanization of the manufacturing and assembly processes, and that essentially we're sort of standing on the threshold of the second industrial revolution. I have great confidence in the future. I personally believe that if we work at the problem, I know that we can solve the problems.
As in every area of change, we need guideposts along the way. In the age of automation, the man who coined the phrase itself may point the way to some of its deeper meanings. John Diebold is 33 years old. He is a management consultant with offices in New York City. Mr. Diebold is the man who first brought the word automation to public attention. He has something to say about the problems it brings.
The basic problem of automation is the problem of education. And it's not just the problem of more education, it's a problem of different education. I think we are finding that education is becoming a more permanent part of our life, and we don't look at it any longer entirely as a one-shot affair.
We asked Mr. Diebold to comment on the problems of additional leisure.
I used to feel that leisure was the ultimate problem of automation. I still feel it may be the ultimate one, but I no longer think it is the immediate problem of automation. For well over a year now, I've been spending about a week each month in Europe and begun to look at the United States the way some of the other inhabitants in the globe see us. Today, in this country, it's become unfashionable to talk about material progress. We feel that we have made great strides in material progress, and our real problem now is one of using our leisure to better advantage. I'm not sure that that's correct. When half the world's population is starving, I don't know that we can realistically feel that material progress is no longer to be desired. Rather than be concerned about shortening the work week dramatically, perhaps our real task is to increase our output much more rapidly than we have been doing in the last 10 years. Perhaps the real question is not, are we automating too rapidly, but are we automating rapidly enough?
John Diebold is not the only American concerned with the future of the Western world in a time of universal revolution. Sumner Schlichter, professor of economics at Harvard University, had this to say.
My guess is that as long as the Cold War continues, The work week will not go down as fast as it has been going down in the last 50 years. We shall need the goods more than we shall need the increased leisure.
Professor Schlichter feels, however, that to some degree at least, man's time is on the way to becoming his own.
For the first time in the world's history, we have the possibility of a cultural revolution because we have leisure broadly distributed, available to everyone. That's what the 40-hour week means. And it will be a little less than 40 hours as time goes on, even in the face of the Cold War. So for the first time in the world's history, we have an opportunity to bring the riches of culture to everyone in the population. And it's a great challenge to our writers and our artists and our musicians and our poets to produce the kind of work that is exciting and inspiring and significant to tens of millions of our citizens. You know, this is an opportunity for us to realize, in terms of culture, the potentialities of our technology.
We listen to a dinner conversation between an airline pilot, a doctor, and an engineer. Their attitudes are perhaps representative of those caught in a world shifting its values from the work ethic to the ethic of fun and games.
Well, I don't think that during our productive lifetime, when we are employed, that we are made use or used to the idea of working alone or being alone very much.
I think all of us need a daily routine, particularly if we've been used to it, and I think we miss it. We miss the daily context.
See, I think maybe that I have somewhat already faced that situation. Way back when, I decided there would never be a time like that in my life. I joined the American Legion, even before that, in college, a fraternity, and before that, other things that were going on all the time. Many varied activities going on. In other words, a person should begin preparing for retirement or a leisure time from the time they're out of high school or during high school even. They should begin adapting themselves to those things that are coming.
The thing concerns me is about the potential of the children growing up today. We could perhaps absorb this new move ourselves, but then what becomes of our children? You know, I think it would be jolly for a while. They would enjoy the 20-hour week. They're not all going to be professional people or specialize in any field. They're going to go into production lines and whatnot. What becomes of these people who are replaced by machines?
Well, maybe we'll have more artists and more musicians.
This denotes a sort of softness to me, in a way. Mm-hmm. In competition with other nations who are perhaps leaning toward more scientific lines, why should we be so artistic all of a sudden?
3 miles from the Longren plant in Torrance, California, is the local YMCA. Here, we heard a statement on leisure from the point of view of an individual concerned with human expression as a means of identification with divine purpose.
Leisure time is an opportunity to grow, to develop, to find some reaffirmation of the center core of your life. It's a chance to sort of charge your batteries and return to the automation of present-day world with a more personal feeling, a better awareness of where you are in life.
But for others, leisure provides the means only for escape into a gray shadow land, a land of desperate waiting, ceaseless shuffling. Here is a poker player, a man who frequents gambling casinos in the Torrance area.
You know, you can come in here extremely depressed about something or worried about something, and first thing you know, you get lost in the game, or you're conversing with the people at the table, or ordinarily you'll find a wonderful crowd of people. I mean, people that are friendly. There's a homey atmosphere, and there's a mental therapy that you just can't get even in a hospital. Well, frankly, I've more or less learned to make a living without working for it. And I'd say that 95% of my time, that is without sleeping, of course, is leisure time.
I see.
And I do spend a lot of it here, believe me. You can just apply yourself and concentrate on your game, and then the friendly atmosphere as well makes it just so enjoyable that you just can't throw it away anymore after you learn to like it. And truthfully, this is my home.
Shuffling the cards in a poker parlor can hardly be as satisfying a way of spending one's life as a human being could desire. Is this the final goal of the American dream? Is this what a leisure-oriented society has to look forward to? August Heckscher, director of the 20th Century Fund, doesn't think so.
I myself like to think that this free time, which we are getting in more and more abundant quantities, has to be taken as a sort of raw material and converted into leisure. What the end product should be is difficult to say briefly, but it must involve, I think, some constructive elements, both as far as the individual is concerned and as far as the social order as a whole is concerned.
Is leisure a value in or of itself, or is it rather part and parcel with the way a man spends his working life? Here is Mr. Heckscher.
The Greeks, of course, did believe that the end of living was the kind of pursuit of truth which they associated with leisure. In the Western society, leisure has always been a byproduct of the work process. Today, I think we're in a sort of middle ground where more and more people are working in order not merely to live, but are working in order that they may live well. And the living well becomes the objective of their life, and work, therefore, becomes a kind of secondary and necessary process. Men are not looking for the ultimate satisfactions of life on the job. They're looking for those satisfactions in the free time that comes after the job, or more and more in the free years that come after retirement.
A world in which men's jobs are secondary to other interests is a world to be desired. But is it possible that the world of automation threatens us with the loss of livelihood, of the physical sustenance necessary to preserve an interest in anything else? In just a moment, we'll examine that question further.
Leisure may be a problem in Torrance, California, but most of us still hate to have anything interfere with our free time. An auto accident, even a minor one, for example, often means paperwork, phone calls, and time-consuming fuss and bother. But with Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company, there's very little loss of leisure when accidents happen. In several states, Nationwide's revolutionary new drive-in program, now in operation, settles auto claims while you wait. Drive in your damaged car, get the damage appraised, and drive out with your claim check. Nationwide has also pioneered immediate cash settlements for bodily injury claims, no matter who's at fault, to help avoid costly, drawn-out lawsuits. New ideas like these make Nationwide the first choice of nearly 3 million drivers. For rates and coverages for your car, just contact your representative of Nationwide, the company with new ideas for a new era.
Does automation bring with it the problem of technological unemployment? Here is Walter Reuther.
Well, this is the big problem. And I don't believe that we can truly measure the impact of automation upon the displacement of labor yet, because it's too early. But certainly, based upon what has already happened, this will become an increasingly serious problem unless we begin to project plans into the future. Now, many things have got to be done. Obviously, we've got to retrain workers so that they can be absorbed with new skills as automation changes the character and the composition and the requirements of each job. Free labor and free management in cooperation with free governments ought to create some sort of a technological clearinghouse where there could be a central place where we could assemble all of the data, what is happening today, what we can project for tomorrow, what we can think about beyond tomorrow, so that as a rational process, we can begin to know the facts and then begin to plan as free people to meet the problems and to realize the promise of the greater abundance that these machines will make possible.
The world of tomorrow is a world in which the work required to keep us alive, to give meaning to our being, may well be incredibly less than the quantity of work required of each of us even today. When an experiment in concentrated leisure in Torrance, California, must be put down as a failure, we should ask ourselves where the roots of the failure lie. We may well find that they are planted deep in the soil of American habit. But perhaps those habits are changing. Here is the concertmaster of the South Bay Civic Orchestra. He works in a Torrance aircraft plant.
I would like the 20-hour work week very much. It would give me a chance to spend more time with my music, and I would find more time to practice. It's an amazing thing. You'd be surprised the number of working people that are accomplished musicians.
Others are already so far advanced in the use of leisure as to find it very much like work.
Bowling is an aggressive game where the other guy's making strikes and you're sitting down. You can't do anything about it. You can just sit there and watch him. And I just take it this way. Everybody's got a weakness, and bowling is mine. I just go crazy when the other guy beats me, that's all. Lately, it's getting to be more like work than it is since I've got a little skill in it. When I was real bad, I didn't care so much. You try so hard to be an expert, you lose the fun of the game.
The problems of leisure, it is obvious, are manifold. But they are problems far more pleasant in contemplation than some others with which Americans are faced. In this sense, at least, the world of the 20-hour week is a world to which we can look forward with anticipation, if not with equanimity. It is a world that demands a new kind of American, an American with a mind eager to embrace a way of life far different from that lived by the Americans who stretched across this country in the centuries before anyone anticipated the era of the hidden revolution. The new American, if he is to succeed in his mission of leisure, must adapt to a totally new outlook. Peter Drucker, author of The New Society and the forthcoming Landmarks of Tomorrow, looks at the situation this way.
The problem, I think, is to create, well, you might call it the leisure mind, the man who is not satisfied with the excitement of his immediate work and the satisfaction and the challenge and the frustrations, and who is not satisfied either with hobbies and with recreation, but who wants to have leisure, which is not idle time, which is not play time, which is reflective time. Leisure is productive time. Nobody who is idle has leisure. But what we need are people who will be willing to force themselves, despite the appeal of the work and the hours it gobbles up, to stand back and be human beings and citizens and persons rather than just specialists and experts and producers.
This is Ed Morrow. Good night and good luck.
You have been listening to The Hidden Revolution, narrated by Edward R. Murrow. The program was written and produced by Don Kellerman. Field reporters, Arthur Barron and Joel Heller. This has been a Unit 1 presentation of CBS News. The Hidden Revolution is brought to you by the company that works with you, that works for you with new ideas for a new era, Nationwide Mutual of Columbus, Ohio, and its 5,000 local representatives. For your free discussion guide to this series, write to Nationwide Insurance, Columbus 16, Ohio. And tune in January 21st for Part 4 of The Hidden Revolution, Man and His Neighbors.
This is the CBS Radio Network.